hope the struggle will continue. Everywhere I've shown the tape, people have said, huh? You know, even if they didn't go through solidarity. So it's a really big issue. Okay, are there any, yeah. Maybe.
I think, I was involved in Women Against Budget too, and I think the groundwork was there. Like, there was the grassroots were incredibly organized and excited about going, and the leadership was kind of holding them back. So I think, in a way, I think for someone that didn't have anything to do or out of the province, anything to do with the struggle, then maybe it's important in the beginning to do a synopsis of the short history of it, so you know what's going to happen in the end, so you have something to refer to as you're experiencing these, you know, very really strong images in the colonial.
Or if there was more, I don't know, background, then you could appreciate the strength and appreciate more what happened at that time. But I find myself looking at it and just wanting to believe that this could continue.
Every possible convention that, I mean, every time you can cut to a child crying or looking down, miserable or whatever, it's in there. I mean, it's really like, it's a really good tape to look at, you know, how to produce a very propagandistic piece of work. The thing I left out too is the use of the Fraser Institute. You know, always go to your enemy and get some footage and show it in the worst light. I mean, it is a good thing to do, even if you're doing a tape that doesn't have these kinds of techniques. You know, because it gives you a real counterpoint to argue against. But that's in there too. So I think, yeah, that's very conscious.
I mean, it's really strong to show just how bad it was.
Film theory, and we did not think that you should mediate jump cuts and edits and that kind of thing. critical to see that we were manipulating and structuring the information in the way we were editing it. But other than that, it uses virtually no narration. It's the complete opposite way of operating. So it's much rougher. I'd say that my work right now still uses some of the same techniques, but on a technical level, it's much smoother, and it doesn't sort of put people through bad lighting, bad audio, and that kind of thing. But the basic principle is still one that I think a lot of feminist video adheres to, which is that essentially you are letting the people speak for themselves. You have enough trust in their capacity to tell their story that your role as the producer is to document it, find ways of illustrating it, and find ways of organizing that information to make it coherent, but you don't impose a consciousness on them by narration. So you don't try and contextualize their information by narrating a bigger story around it or saying how it should be read. The other thing is, I'll get into a bit later on today in another tape, is the whole question of who is an authority person. And in the Solidarity tape, they did go to people for their stories, but there was a lot of use of educators, lawyers, trade union leaders, and so on. I think that, again, that the sort of tendency in sort of feminist documentary as it evolved is to move away from the experts telling the story and the women giving the illustrations of their victimization to the rank and file of the union telling the story, to the women who are battered women telling their story, to whatever. So there's a reliance on the people in the situation to be able to tell you directly as a viewer their story and letting you identify. This specific tape is called TWU Tell. We did two tapes. One is TWU Tell. One is This Line Is Not in Service. The TWU Tell version is the shorter version. It was shot in about 2 days and edited in about 10 hours, and thus it remained. It was then cable cast the next day, and it was kind of an interesting process because it was during the occupation of DCTEL, and we really did want to do a news piece that would provide the workers' point of view, and so that was the goal of it. We did do it for broadcast, and the process was kind of fun in that it was very exciting that the occupation was happening. So we basically just went down to BC Tough, the Seymour Street branch. First I phoned TWU, and they said, yeah, go on down there if you want to. And we went down there, talked to the people. They said, yeah, sure, come in. And we were allowed into the occupation whenever we wanted to be there. There we were. And the rest of the press was taken through on regular tours, which we also went on. But we actually got to stay there and shoot as much footage as we wanted to. And we shot for 3 days with it. And the tape right now is being, actually it's still fairly heavily distributed. And the union uses it for sort of historical educational work. We later did this half hour version, which is quite a bit cleaner and has a lot more information in it and has some dramatizations and stuff. But I want to show you the short version because I think it's kind of a classic example of the kind of documentary style that emerged in a sense in a reaction to what you just saw. Documentary stuff. And I guess she decided that she wanted to move into something, a form that was more sort of emotional in a sense and would really capture the essence of these women's lives changing. And tomorrow I'll show you some tapes that use somewhat different strategies as well. These aren't the only three approaches, but they're kind of, in a sense, paradigms, and they're very different. I'll show you the whole thing.
How long is
about this? 23 minutes more. Thank you. think it was done for both the purposes of making essentially an art piece and that dealt with those issues for the artist's sort of need, own needs. Because I think for her also, just, she was also starting to go through her own consciousness of her own aging process and really wanted to look at some of that. But I think she also thought it could be used to facilitate discussions on some of the issues facing women as they get older. So it had a kind of double purpose there. Yeah. Always one of those issues.
You mean testimony? I agree, I love that type. I find it incredibly emotional. I've seen it about 6 or 7 times. And I guess I love the camera work and her editing techniques. And I do love the party scene. I think this, it is a bit too long, but I think it's, I don't really know what she's trying to say, but just those women being together. And I just know in my own experience, I find it very hard to relax and just enjoy what's happening around me rather than going on to the next step or, you know, wanting to shut up or wanting something else to happen, to just go down and enjoy each other's company. I don't know. It sounds like you understand.
No, but I think
I
she is saying that. I think you're right. That what she's trying to say is, like, look at what you have and what's around you and live now. And but I think from a kind of feminist perspective, not from a kind of spiritual be here now perspective, you know. And I think she's trying to just make us feel some of the pain that those women go through as they go through their process. So it's hard with drama because in a way you can end up asking it to do too much, like asking it to give you solutions and to lay it all out, when I think the purpose of that kind of tape is to put people into a place where they're willing to discuss some of the issues that are. But I think that you raise some of the real limits of that kind of form. And I think the discussion does too, which is that with a documentary option, you can simply lay things out. But with a dramatization, you're going to have people's reaction to whether the acting works, the way it's put together, the way the editing works, whether we like the emotional qualities that are given to us or not, or whether they make us feel good or bad or whatever. So it's one of the liabilities. Anything more people want to say about that?
Just the what it does when I watch it is to recognize how important it is to start out with a really clear objective of what you're trying to do. I agree that the film's trying to do too much, and that maybe I would suspect that the planning was fuzzy or that the initial objectives were fuzzy.
a lot of takes actually have, when a producer chooses to do a piece of work as opposed to being hired to do something, you know, I think it's often because there's some resonance for them about that issue. And if you're trying to do a documentary that represents a group, then you have to constantly, I think, negotiate your own needs in the situation and what they need to say about their situation. And it really is a negotiation. It's that not only on an emotional level, it's that on a political or an analytic level, right? Because you don't always agree with what people are saying. One of the things that I think making stuff like this or an art tape gives you is a little bit more space to be able to impose your own vision and your own process inside the work. And also, I think another thing that you haven't seen yet, but maybe some of the other tapes will show, is one of the things feminist documentary producers have done is sometimes to actually show their planning process inside a tape, show the production process, just show some of the thinking out of what's happening, so that, you know, you can't, it's another way of empowering your audience to say, look, this is a production, we're manipulating you, don't ever think that we're not, media is about manipulation, but also to let the audience in on some of the choices that are being made. Because you are constantly making choices. But that's very difficult. One of the tapes Amelia made, which is called Union Rights or Mother's Rights, which was on the maternity leave issue, when we actually interviewed women, we discovered that a number of them were much less interested in maternity leave, as the union was proposing it, than being able to take 5 years off their job or 4 years off their job and return. Like, they really believe they should be at home with their kids, actually. And they wanted to come back with the same level of seniority. And that was a really big problem for us, because we had problems with that demand. Like, you know, we had problems with the way it was being motivated, but essentially that women should be in the home with their kids, and that they had tremendous problems with childcare and like that whole thing. It was a very traditional view. And so we had to decide whether or not to put that in the tape, and we did put some of that in the tape. What we didn't put in the tape was some of the very strong male anti-women sentiment around the maternity leave demand, because we felt that for our audience, which was not so much an internal debate in the union, that that would be very destructive of the tape we wanted to make. But you're really faced with those kinds of decisions all the time. How much do you censor the process? How much do you put in? Whose consciousness do you represent? What do you do if the leadership has one point of view in a struggle, let's say, like solidarity, and the rank and file has another? Who are you working for? You know, anyhow, that's going to come up in this section now fairly consistently. I'll try and let you in on the gossip on each of the cases that we're going to see. So what I want to do now is to make the process more accessible to you, to talk about models for working that can ultimately hopefully give you the tape that you want. And essentially what I'm going to do is provide several models for how to organize a video production depending on the availability of time, labor power, money, and concerns around control. And I think what some of the different models are, there's three that I can think of. One is a very clear-cut contractual relationship where essentially you as a community group or a union or whatever, society, hire a producer and basically lay out what you want, and then that person will do what you want. And I'll talk about how you make that happen. The second is a more collaborative process, and that can be initiated either by a community organization, or it tends to happen more when a producer is really attached to a subject and they approach you and they want to do something on your group or on the issue that you represent. And then you have to essentially negotiate that collaboration. And the third is for a group to develop their own production through skill training workshops and essentially developing your own script and going out there and doing it. And I'm going to go through each one by one, and talk about ways of making them work and show you tapes that come out of each process, and you can look at some of the differences there. So model one is a contractual relationship, and this is essentially one in which the group initiates the production and has a clear idea of what it needs, or at least the topic area it wants covered. for example, job evaluation, a story about the service that you give, a story about a history of an issue that you've been dealing with, maybe. And often in that situation, you'll have a fairly good idea of your potential audience. You'll know who that is. You may have to sort of hone it down, but you'll tend to know who you want to talk to. For example, is it a trading tape? That's very different from a tape that's for broadcast. So again, who's the audience? And in this situation, the group tends to contact a producer or put out a call for proposals and request that they see a proposal. Then you tend to meet with the producer and talk about that proposal and then request a budget. And after some consultation with the group, the producer's then sent off to develop some kind of script idea. It's, I think, very important to have an idea fairly well from the word go, although again it can be negotiated, as to who is going to control the production and to establish a process for decision making, and I kind of can't emphasize that enough. If you look at the sheets I've given you, there's a page that says contractual agreements, which I'm going to come back to later on when I actually talk about contracts. But you might just want to sort of glance at point three, which is clear lines of consultation and control. These will vary from production to production, but include, is there a script approval necessary? That is, do you as an organization want to see a basic script outline, or even go as far as to see the script and then say, yes, we like this, or no, we don't like this? Do you want to go further than that and look at the rushes once they've been produced and say, you know, we don't want this part in, or, you know, go ahead with this generally? Who is going to have control of the editing process? Obviously, you're going to have the producer and skilled people doing the editing, but do you want to have someone in there saying, we can't have this set on here, this is damaging to our society, or are you going to give more control and power to the producer? Is there a liaison person assigned to the society? Okay, so the things I think should be in the process are some form of script, okay, that is, even if it's just a proposal, you know, that says it's a half-hour production, it's going to use this and this resources, and it's basically going to cover this. For you to see that, for you as a producer to have that seen, and for them it to be said, okay, go ahead from here. The very least, you want to have that, I think. Secondly, you absolutely should have written contracts. I can't emphasize that enough, and that may sound really horrible for those of us who work in feminist groups or community organizations or unions or whatever, to think that we actually have to have a written contract with the producer, or as producers who identify with those issues to demand one. But having worked on all kinds of productions and seen things go terribly wrong, as well as terribly right, I think it's just really important to have a piece of paper that says, you know, some stuff. And I'll go back to what a contract should say later on, but to have a written agreement. And then to have, thirdly, a liaison person. That is, one person from the organization who is going to be consistently there through the 6 months of the year, whatever that it takes, to raise the money for the production, make it happen, finish it, and do its premiere screening. I can't emphasize that enough either. I once was hired by a union to do a production, and we went for the funding, and they were all gung-ho about it and all that stuff. And then the guy who was nurturing it through the process got defeated at the next election, and the person who was put in his place just didn't think video or film was useful for the union, and that was it. And they'd already invested time and money and so on in it. And I think if they'd had a consistent person who wasn't there and then maybe not there, that video would have happened. And it was sad for me, but it was really their loss. And I think it's really important to have one person, and also not to have a committee where you've got one person coming in and then someone going in. You just need that kind of consistency. So those are the three points. Script okay, a written contract, and a liaison person. So basically, even with a contract, there's two routes that you can go. One is that the producers have a great deal of autonomy once the script or the concept is approved. Or the second one is that the organization establishes very tight control, script approval, rushes approval, edit approval, final edit approval throughout the process. So now, just to go back and concretize how those models would look. With Common Cause, which you saw the first tape, there is very tight control over the process of producing it. It was important for the Federation of Labor and the Operation Solidarity that they feel comfortable with the analysis of Solidarity. It was a difficult tape, as we all mentioned, because it was begun in the upswing of the Solidarity movement. No one knew what would happen at the end. Lots of money was invested. Everyone knew it was being done. And then it had to be finished when the fight was over, right? And all the problems still remained, and a lot of people were dissatisfied. So that's a really difficult project. And essentially, as a producer, when you work for an organization, you discover that they have their own version of history, that if you don't agree with that version, you either have to negotiate autonomy or ruin the script for your point of view as well, or others, or else not take the job. If you're not willing to work that way, don't